I'm Leonard Lopate. Welcome to my show. And joining me now is Patricia T. O'Connor, who has written a number of books on the English language. Woe is I, Words Fail Me, You Send Me. And she has been a regular contributor to this show, visiting us once a month for how many years now, Pat?
Oh, gosh.
We're both
six,
getting
seven?
On, long in the tooth, as they say. And please don't call in and ask where long
no,
the tooth comes
please.
From. It's kind of obvious. But we do take listener calls during this with your questions about the English language. And our number here is 212-433-9692. And St. Patrick's Day is this Friday, and you thought that you'd talk about some Irish contributions to the English language.
I thought I would. It's Shamrock season again, and it's the time of year when people with names like Wong and Gonzalez and Schmidt wash down their corned beef and cabbage with green beer and sing When Irish Eyes Are Smiling, because everybody, as we know, is part Irish. But here's something to think about if you're interested in language. Some 40 million Americans, give or take, describe themselves as having some Irish ancestry. That's about eight times the entire population of Ireland, north and south. And yet, English,
boy, that potato famine.
I know. And yet, English has almost no loan words derived from Irish Gaelic, words that we've adopted into English. We have adopted, you know, thousands of words from German, from the Scandinavian languages, from Dutch, French, Latin, Greek, Arabic, Sanskrit, Algonquin, you name it. But there are almost no loan words from Irish Gaelic that have been assimilated into English. I mean, there are a few, most of the ones we know of, words like banshee, shillelagh, colleen, leprechaun, shamrock, brogue, they haven't really been assimilated. They still shout Ireland. There are a couple of genuine ones we know about. Galore, meaning lots. The noun slew, again meaning lots, as in lots of corned beef and cabbage.
And slew is Gaelic?
Slew, uh-huh.
Oh, I use that all the time.
Not
because there's no other word
slay.
To use.
Yeah, a slew of something or other. Also, the word Tory is derived from an Irish Gaelic word for robber.
Wow, well, I'll have to confront Jeffrey Archer with that. After all, he's gotten out of prison recently.
Right.
And now written another thriller. He'll be here later.
Right.
He's a Tory.
But, you know, many other words that are sometimes attributed to Irish that you may read here and there that they come from Gaelic are not really. For instance, shanty, shenanigans, buddy, brash, shebang. Every once in a while, these words pop up and someone says, hey, that sounds like Irish Gaelic. but there's no documentation that they really come from there.
Do we know where shebang came from?
Yeah, probably.
Because that's like another slew, the whole shebang.
Yeah, but it's probably not from Gaelic. It's probably about as Irish as corned beef and cabbage, which isn't particularly Irish. And many so-called Irish expressions are myths that were created by Hollywood or vaudeville, such as top of the morning. I mean, Irish people do not go around saying top of the morning or to be sure or begorra or wearing of the green or all those. Those are pretty much products of the Bing Crosby days. But so that brings up the question, why are there so few Gaelic loanwords in English? Well, there are some theories. One might be that the Irish were a conquered people, and generally conquerors do not absorb the language of the conquered. The Norman invaders were a bit different.
But the British also took a lot of words from India.
They did. That's true. By and large, it's the conquered people who acquire the language of the dominating culture. But also, the Brits not only discouraged Gaelic, but they even passed laws against it. And the Irish themselves in the 19th century tried to stamp out the use of Gaelic and punished children for using Gaelic words and that kind of thing. And they almost succeeded in stamping it out. It's recently undergone a revival. But for all these reasons, when we had this big mass of Irish immigration, these were not people who wanted to bring Gaelic with them.
It's not just the Irish. We recently had one of the leading young poets from Wales here, Owen Shears, and he's learning Welsh now in his 30s because it was something that was denied to him when he was younger.
Have they managed to come up with any vowels? But the same thing is happening with Irish Gaelic, too. And I think to a lesser extent with Scots Gaelic. It's just the natural thing. People like to rediscover their culture and their language. And these are very difficult languages to rediscover. But interestingly, Gaelic has a kind of construction present perfect of the verb to be, for example. They might be saying, they might say, I am going, I be going, I do be going. So they have a lot of interesting constructions that would be considered grammatically incorrect in English.
Now, what is accomplished by saying, I do be going?
I don't be knowing.
I mean, I understand Frank Sinatra doing a do be, but your name is O'Connor. I thought you'd have some insight.
I'm sorry. I can't answer that. But at any rate, it's a sad thing, but we have almost no Irish loanwords in English. But maybe now that it's reviving over there, we'll start absorbing some.
Should we take some calls?
Please.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. And Chaim from Manhattan, or is it Chaim?
Either one.
Okay, well, you're on the air either way.
I called you guys back in during the last presidential election, and I complained that the word architect was being abused, and you agreed, and now several years later it's sort of become a complete a fait accompli in the language that, you know, Karl Rove is the architect and on and on.
It usually means something pejorative, though.
Well, it's become that because it's become twisted around in the sense that, well, I don't know if it indeed is pejorative. I think it's pejorative to architects when Karl Rove is the architect. But my point is that, going back to your earlier point of it's the conqueror who sort of sets the terms of the quidditch, the coinage of words and phrases. It's just terribly interesting to me how this process, you know, is an ongoing you know, way of language being formed and shaped and changed. And so here's a question: I hear that even to this day, some people refer to 9/11 as 9/11, particularly, I think, Charlie Rangel, our congressman, still says 9/11. And I've heard a number of other people refer to it that way. So it seems that some people still think of that day as, you know, this horrible emergency, and they think about calling 9/11 as opposed to the date. And so just a sort of general question I guess is, you know, who decides this, or is it really just sort of usage and I guess, you know, who's got the loudest megaphone in some sense?
Well, I think it's usage, and it's also there's something to do with comfort, because, for instance, the Norman invaders stayed. They settled down. They married Celtic men and women. And they became absorbed into Britain. Therefore, they absorbed English that became Norman flavored, rather than bringing imposing their language on the culture that they moved into. The Norman invasion is a sort of I guess, an exception to that general rule about the conquerors. But again, they felt comfortable with it, and they became part of the culture.
But in Chaim's case, where he's talking about 9/11 as opposed to 9/11, I would think that the great majority of people will say 9/11 mm-hmm. because that is the date. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's even an affectation for some people to say 9/11 to call attention to the fact that it was the kind of crisis that mm-hmm. it was. But it's almost like taking poetic license, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And I don't think it's anything that's going to spread or last. I think the majority of people think of it as 9/11, and that's probably how it'll always be remembered.
On the other hand, if everybody started saying 9/11, then 9/11 would disappear as the significant name.
I suppose so.
We go now to Mary from Connecticut. Hi, Mary.
Hello, Leonard. I have a question. I now have two questions, called with one, and the one is that I heard someone recently refer to as belonging to a white shoe law firm.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the term, can't imagine where it came from or what it means.
It seems to me that I checked this out a few years ago, and it was something like the kind of guys, waspy guys, who change into white shoes in the summertime.
Oh.
So it could be like a straw hat or something.
Yeah,
like
that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, I'm not vouching for that.
Yeah,
but it definitely suggests upper class. It's an elite, mm-hmm. Waspy kind of law firm, as opposed to something where one of the partners would have a more ethnic name.
Mm-hmm. Right. I've heard that. It's just that, in my experience, people who wear white shoes are generally not waspy upper class. Males, I mean. Mm-hmm.
But at another time, they
yeah.
would have been, especially in Newport.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then may I ask you an Irish term? As I was listening, I was remembering that when we were growing up, my mother, if we cried, would say, stop that belouring.
Belouring?
Belouring. Hmm. Or belouring. Her grandparents were born in Ireland. So it's not as though Irish was in our house, but I always felt that she must have gotten it from there, because what else could it mean?
Or maybe it's a reference from to that old Irish song, Blur Allure Allura. I don't know. I don't know where that comes
okay.
from.
We will be speaking to other people who have ideas about this as this conversation continues, so maybe we will find out from them, okay?
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you so much for calling us. In fact, let's go right to Alan from Manhattan, who claims he has some Irish words that have made it into English. Alan, have you ever heard belouring?
I haven't, actually. I haven't heard of that one.
I hear from your accent that you may have roots in Ireland.
I do, yeah. I was born there, but I came here to live when I was 22, so almost half my life now in America. But once you're born Irish, you know, it's you never leave it behind.
So what are some of the words that you feel have come from Gaelic into English?
Shanty, for example.
Mm. Well, Pat, you said shanty is not.
Yeah, that's been disputed. There are arguments for it, but mm-hmm. there are other arguments against it, and it can't be shown definitively that it's from Gaelic.
Right. Well, shanty literally means old house.
Uh-huh.
Shan meaning old, and tea mm-hmm. is house.
And I know that the shanty town was that expression was first applied to Irish encampments. Mm-hmm. So there is some evidence for it.
And some people have said, in fact, my American Heritage Dictionary, that shanty comes from the French Canadian chantier, which is a timber house.
Mm-hmm.
So actually from the French word timber yard, from Old French gantry, and from Latin, cantharius. So maybe it isn't Gaelic after all, or maybe they all come from the same Indo-European root at one point or another.
Perhaps. Another one.
I wonder what the Russians call it.
Whiskey would be another one.
Whiskey.
From the Irish word ishka, ishka baha.
Uh-huh. That doesn't come from Scotland?
Well, Scottish and Irish would be very, very close. Scots Gaelic and Irish Gaelic are very close.
Well, I know that the word whiskey is spelled differently in Mm-hmm. If it's Irish whiskey or Scotch, one of them has an E,
exactly.
Y.
Yeah.
I don't know. How did that happen?
Oh, gosh.
Now, here's another.
My deaf now already.
Now, here's another word. It really has. I was making that joke about Indo-European roots, but uh-huh. This is a case where that is true. That's why vodka and whiskey are similar. they all go back to the root wed. So in Indo-European, water comes from it as well.
Does wet come from it? Wet?
I suspect.
Hmm.
And vodka being distilled from potatoes, you would think should have come from Ireland.
Well, actually, it should have come from Peru or the Andes because there were no potatoes in Ireland before the conquistadors went into Latin America.
Right. And another word is boycott.
Oh, yes. Of course, that's not from Gaelic. It's from a person's name.
Captain Boycott. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Another one is biddy, you know, as in an old biddy. It's thought to come from the name Bridget, because Bridget was a name of housemaid or whatever. But again, that's not from Gaelic. It is from an Irish name.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back to more of your calls here at 212-433-9692. When we continue this conversation with Patricia T. O'Connor, author of Woe Is I, Words Fail Me, and You Send Me, and some other books that are still in the works. And we're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, and we're talking about the English language and taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Pat, we got some emails from listeners who suggested, well, one suggested boycott, which we've already dealt with, and also Beyond the Beyonds, both English words, even though they mm-hmm. are Irish phrases, mm-hmm. Irish mm-hmm. derived. But another listener suggested Malarkey and Smithereens.
Mm.
And they sound like they may very well be
Gaelic-based.
Well,
especially Malarkey. Doesn't it sound like an Irish last name, Mr. Malarkey? But I think its origins are unknown. I've always read that its origins are unknown, unless there's been some recent research that traces it to Gaelic.
Well, I have
that
looked
I don't
up,
know about.
I've looked up Smithereens, uh-huh. and our listener is correct, according to the American Heritage Dictionary. It says that Smithereens comes from Irish Gaelic smiterin, diminutive of smiodar, which means small fragment. So Smithereens broken it up into small fragments. And let's go take some calls from our listeners. We have Ben from Brooklyn. Hi.
Hi, Ben.
Yes, Ben.
The question was, and I think you actually answered it inadvertently about 5 minutes ago. The thing was people's use of the word so-called, and you use the expression. And people mm-hmm. use the word so-called for a storm when it actually is a storm.
Mm.
And my understanding of so-called was it wasn't. You know, it was saying, well, there's some doubt about the fact that I'm saying what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, and you used it actually correctly about 5 minutes ago.
I did. Mm-hmm. What did I say?
So-called Irish expression.
I'm so unconscious.
Yeah. And, I mean, so for a while it got to be sort of epidemic. Everybody was using it as a kind of like wind-up, like a cough before they said something. You know, the so-called fireplace. And it was a fireplace. And you think, well, gee, all you have to say is fireplace. That's all.
But, Ben, don't you think that people use things like that as stallers,
yes.
One, they're trying to figure out what the word really is. Mm-hmm. They can't remember the fireplace, and so they say it's a so-called fireplace.
You know, it's another way of saying if you will.
Right.
That's
mm-hmm.
one of those stalling fillers.
A
fireplace, if you will. Yeah.
I knew a woman who I thought was the fastest talker in America. And then one day I analyzed what she said, and it turned out she had so many of those stock phrases that she actually was not speaking any faster than anyone else, but she was saying mm-hmm. a lot more words than the rest of us.
Well, there are a lot of politicians that fall into that category. Uh-huh. But the other thing, just the thing about the Irish thing, I grew up in Crewe in the northwest of England.
Ah.
And one of the things that my uncle and aunt and one or two people, my father didn't use it, but my uncle and aunt used it particularly, that when people were poor, they lived on Carey Street. And we were so oblivious to the racial slur of that, that we just assumed that's what it was. You know, it was called, when you were broke, they would say sometimes, well, we're out of money, we're going to be living on Carey Street soon.
Oh,
that's amazing.
Oh.
You know, and the point was, we didn't even see it.
Right. You know, there are some other phrases like that that are derogatory.
Yeah.
Of for instance, to do a Paddy Doyle,
yeah,
meant to go to jail, to,
yeah,
do jail time.
Right.
Paddy Wagon was
right, Paddy Wagon, right,
a policeman,
sure,
which always was supposedly taking away drunken Irishmen.
Sure, who else? Yeah.
Yeah.
But the point was, we didn't even know it was a slur. You know,
mm-hmm,
that's just what it was. You know, that, you,
mm-hmm,
know, you didn't say you live on, you know, Wilkinson Street, you know, because,
uh-huh,
obviously Wilkinson's lived in a,
right,
nice street, you know.
Let me ask you this. Have you heard of a novel called Crewe Train?
No.
Oh, okay, never
Crewe
mind.
Train. Really?
Yeah, it's a like a 20s or 30s novel by, I think, Rose Macaulay.
Hmm.
Crewe, C-R-E-W-E, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Crewe, right, Train, because the station had to stop there. So.
Well, it was sort of like, yeah, well, it was a big, huge junction.
Mm-hmm,
and it,
mm-hmm,
was like, it was like Washington. It was,
right,
like, it was where they made engines and all that stuff. My parents were all, my grandparents were involved in making steam engines and all that kind of,
right,
stuff. And it was basically like Boeing, that it was a company town, you know,
uh-huh,
run by the London Northwestern Railway Company.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I just wanted to, you know.
Well, thank you
just,
for calling us, Ben.
Yeah, sure. Good to talk to you. Enjoy the show, always. Thank you very much.
And we go now to Joel from Freehold, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Hi, Joel. You're on the air. By the way, this is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org, and we are live.
Hi. The question one of the things you just said is you are live.
Well, I said that because I knew what you were going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
I was being provocative.
My complaints in listening to, you've said it, I've listened to it on other radio stations, and they will say, we will be taping the show live. I don't know what the alternative to that would be. I understand what is meant by when they say that, but all shows are taped live for broadcast later.
You are absolutely right. I think when people say taping live, they mean tape before an audience.
Either that or they're
to be broadcast later.
Yes, but when they say taping live, and it always gets,
yeah,
me, because I said, what is the alternative to taping live?
Yeah, sometimes they'll also say pre-recorded.
Well,
obviously it was recorded.
Okay, you
caught us.
I appreciate your taking this, because this has bothered me for a long time.
Well,
so I don't, now I expect from now on that you won't be saying that.
I'll never say it again.
I'm sure. Thank you very much.
At least not until the next time I blow it. Janine from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the Leonard Lopez Show.
Hello, Leonard. Hello, Patricia.
Hello.
I just wanted to address the vernacular. I grew up kind of all over. I lived in Ireland for a while. I'm American, Irish. I'm married to an Irishman. And he uses this phrase, I do be going, quite regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it indicates a difference an ongoing activity or a singular event, such as, he would never say, I do be going to the store now, but he would say,
mm-hmm,
you do be going to the store, mm-hmm, every Sunday.
Does he speak Gaelic?
He does, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a common Gaelic construction.
Right.
But I understand the distinction. It's,
mm-hmm,
it's saying that I do something on a regular basis.
Right,
exactly.
It's an ongoing thing.
It's not the
thing.
Same as I am going.
Right, right.
Okay. We would just simply say, I go to,
mm-hmm,
the store every Saturday.
Correct, uh-huh, yeah.
But there are other languages for example, Chinese, where you only speak in the present, and then you have to modify by future, past, or whatever,
mm-hmm,
do the same sort of thing that we sometimes do in English. But it's interesting that in Gaelic, the distinction is made even there.
Yeah.
So do you think that it's any clearer when he says that than when you say it the other way?
Well, now that I've learned to interpret him, I think, I mean, I don't think either way is clearer than the other, but once you understand what the distinction is, it is a definite distinction to make.
Has he ever said top of the morning?
Never, ever.
What about Begorra?
Of course not.
Or Begorra. He doesn't say, oh, God, he's not really Irish. I can't believe it.
That drives me mental when I hear people saying this.
Thank you, Janine.
Thank you.
By the way, we have received some research from our listeners who tell us that the White Show firm's name is derived from the white buck, shoes that were a fashion requirement within the elite social organizations of the 1950s, although I would have thought that it goes back earlier than that.
So it's kind of a Pat Boone kind of thing.
Yeah, we are. Actually, Pat Boone did wear those kinds of shoes. I did business with Pat Boone at one point.
Oh, really?
Earlier in my life. Yeah,
yeah.
He's called me Lenny. Hi, Lenny. Someday I'll tell you the story. I don't want to take up the time now, but I'll tell you the story of why he canceled a shoot at his home one time.
Okay.
So unsurprisingly Pat Boone-ish. Federico from Manhattan, hi.
Hi. English is a second language for me, and my question is about loan and lend.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it's been accepted to use loan as a verb. I hear it all the time, yet a friend of mine who was very strict on these things said to me that it's completely wrong and that I shouldn't use that. So now I feel very funny about saying I loaned you something.
Mm-hmm. I use loan as a verb myself now and then, and my husband always corrects me. I assume you meant to say lend.
Yes.
But the strict usage experts would tell you that lend is the verb and loan is the noun. But loan is almost universally used in common language as a verb.
But in Spanish, they have the Royal Academy in Madrid that is the organization that accepts certain words, and there are words that are foreign, like apparently lunch is now accepted in Spanish. You can use it.
Oh.
And there are a lot of very vulgar words that, you know, 30, 40 years ago you could have never said, you know, in a polite society, and those have been accepted.
But that's because mm-hmm. Franco is no longer in power.
I guess so, absolutely. But in English, there's no such thing as accepted or not. That
mm-hmm. Well, it's not just yeah. Spain. France has the academy
yes,
as well.
Yes.
And we've discussed mm-hmm. this in the past, Pat. Do we want something like that? We've had a number of – there was a time when all those language experts, John Simon and others, would write these books in which they kind of called for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most English speakers would not want that.
No.
Part of the fun of English is that it's so all-embracing and it changes all the time.
Right,
we don't
right.
need somebody telling
it's
us we could say something.
It's very flexible and alive. And I think that you'd find probably more objections to loan as a verb in Britain than you would in the United States. But I think that's why American English is so interesting, because it's accommodating, and what it accommodates is the wish of the majority. So it's a democratic kind of process.
Thank you so much for your call, Brian from Beacon, New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Leonard, how are you?
I'm
love
well.
Your show. I have a couple of just quick things. One is I have a theory for why Gaelic is not being assimilated into the English language very much. I'm proud to say I'm an Irish citizen, even though I was born and raised in Manhattan. But the Irish, despite the way people think about them, are very unsentimental people. They're very willing to let the past go.
Hmm.
And they don't hold a grudge. They tend to leave things that you wouldn't expect people to leave behind, and that I would think might include language. And secondly, there's one Gaelic word which I think is just about to go into the language, and I hope it does because it's a funny word. And I heard somebody the other day who's not Irish use it, and the word is Egypt.
Oh, Egypt? Like I-D-J-I-T?
It sounds like
for
Egypt,
idiot.
But it's Egypt. E-G-I-T, maybe?
Oh, is it? For a comical form of idiot, is that it?
Yeah, it's like an endearing. Yeah, it's like mm-hmm. an endearing term for an idiot. Is an idiot.
Yeah, I've heard that before, but I thought it was more of a Cockney expression.
No, no. Oh, well, I don't know. That's possible. But my mother used to say it to us. I don't mind being in Egypt.
Well. You don't sound like an Egypt to me, Brian. Thank you for calling us. We got an interesting email from someone who says a lot of words that are from Scotland and Ireland actually come from Old French or from Old Saxon. For example, he says, where I come from, single farm workers live in chambres from the French chambre, and we use a significant number of words today that Chaucer would readily recognize, burl, glycate, etc. So I guess that, well, after all, Breton, they also speak a form of Gaelic, don't they?
Yeah.
And then there are other kinds of other, in the Iberian Peninsula, there are some old Basque,
right.
I think, is related to Celtic.
Right, you'll find all kinds of interconnecting threads in those old languages.
So, and I think, and another listener says, the languages spoken in France and northern Italy before the Roman conquest of northern Italy and then Gaul under Julius belong to the Celtic language family.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all over. It's so hard to tell what is from where and what is not.
Right.
I think we have time to sneak one more call in. This is Len from Mayapak. Lake Mayapak?
Top of the afternoon, guys.
Yes, hi.
First, I empathize with Federico before. English is a second language for me as well. And even though I've been speaking it for many years and even taught it as a second language, I always find its use amusing in many ways and the changes that that people impose on it. But the reason for the call was the word secrete and the use of secrete as a verb in two different functions. I'm always amused. I'm always amused when I hear that some top executive in a company secreted millions of dollars as I visualize him.
He oozed.
From various pores in his body.
Right.
Well, he secreted them to Tikrete, along with Saddam. Or Sodom, as some people call him.
But anyway, it seems that secrete in the sense of hide has been gaining momentum, and you hear it more and more being used on CNN and news shows and so forth. And I'm just wondering why in heaven's name someone would use secrete rather than hide.
Well, I think historically it was quite common to use it to mean hide. To hide something was to secrete something. To make it secret was to secrete it. So I don't know where the oozing, if the oozing part came before or after, but it has a long history of meaning to hide.
Thank you for your call. And just one more thing. A number of people have asked about Donnybrook, which is obviously derived from a place outside of Dublin. And I guess they had brawls on a regular basis. But I don't know. Is it Donnybrook a Gaelic name, do you think?
No, I can't say. But my guess is that it's a place name. Like Boycott or Bridget or Blarney, for example, is a place name rather than a word derived from Gaelic.
Meanwhile, we'll be talking more about the language on April 19th when you return to the show. If you can't get enough of Patricia T. O'Connor, there are the books, Woe Is I, Words Fail Me, You Send Me, available at your local bookstore. And then we'll see you next month.
Thanks.